University Teachers Association of Ghana, Winneba branch, has redone its service with immediate effect. This follows the decision of a Winneba High Court to grant an interim injunction by a plaintiff, Kofi Supikwaira, seeking to declare the decisions of the university over a period when the institution had no governing council null and void. The court asked the vice chancellor and the director of finance to step aside and also gave the government a 2-week ultimatum to constitute governing councils of public universities. This, some means, technically, the decision has led to the university to temporarily be closed down. Behind the News examines the implications of the court ruling and the decision taken by the university teachers. Joining us on the line is Deputy Minister of Education in charge of tertiary education, Professor Kwesi Yanka. Prof, good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
Prof, the court has given the government a 2-week ultimatum to constitute governing councils of the university. Why should it take us this far?
Well, the governing council of Winneba has been constituted. And this afternoon, we came out with a list of chairmen of all the universities, hoping that the full list should be released anytime. It's available, but will be released sometime this weekend. So inauguration of the councils would then take place very early next week.
There's a matter in court now over the legalities of issues or decisions taken by the universities without governing councils. And I think 2 weeks ago, the KNUST graduated students without a governing council. The Winneba issue is also pending. What does this mean for our tertiary institutions?
Well, that is why we have moved as quickly as we can to constitute the councils. Councils are in place now, and the Council of State today came out with a list of members of council for most of the public universities, including Winneba. And we hope that very early next week, one or two left, their councils will be announced.
UTAC at Winneba has redone its service. Has that officially come to your attention?
I just read it in the newspaper, which I do not understand because the rule of law is operating. And I think when court verdicts come out and we do not agree, we can resort to the same process to have the issue resolved.
So what is the way forward? Understand Winneba, for instance, sandwich students are supposed to report on Monday, and they are coming from all over the country.
Well, there is, in the absence of Vice Chancellor, I believe that the court did not ask the pro-Vice Chancellor to step aside. So I believe there is management still in place as far as the statutes of the university are concerned. And as far as I'm concerned, there should be, even if the VC has to step aside, there is the pro vice chancellor who has not been asked to step aside by the court.
Prof, a school of thought has it that the same council which is in contention was the one that promoted the pro-VC to his position. And so if the decision taken by that council is illegal, then the position of the provost becomes affected.
I will wait for the court to pronounce on that, and I will respect any issue that comes out of the court, any verdict. And I haven't heard any saying that the pro-vice chancellor to step aside.
So in the meantime, do you intend meeting UTAC?
Well, the news just came out, and we have to study the implications of it and decide on what to do next. I don't know who has taken the decision, because the last time when the university shut down, the court came and said that it did not direct that the university should be shut down. And I don't know whether the court directed that the university should be shut down. And so I would just advise that they resort to the same legal process by which the other issues are being resolved. And they, if they disagree, they can just go to court. That's why we have the rule of law. I've never heard of a situation where people go on strike because they disagree with the court judgment in a democracy. Just go back to the court. There are legal processes. There are lawyers. There is an appeal that one can resort to.
Prof, parents' guidance out there are afraid. They are uncertain because admission processes are supposed to be ongoing. Sandwich programs are supposed to be ongoing. And so they don't even know what is going to happen. And we understand the wheels of justice grind slowly.
Well, that is why the University Council has been constituted. And we announced the chairman of respective university councils in hopes that very early next week, the full membership will be announced. So there will be a council in place, and there's no reason why a council cannot then continue from where the court left off.
So parents and guidance should not be afraid.
There is a council in place, and I believe they will note the urgency of the matter and then move very quickly to convene emergency meetings and take decisions.
Right.
So once there's a council in place, I think that the situation is much easier now.
All right. Prof, I want to thank you very much. But before you leave, the UTAC also talked of their book and research allowance.
I think you probably don't have your ears to the ground, and I suggest that maybe you ask about what is happening in other parts of the media. It was announced this afternoon while I was inaugurating the board for the University of Health and Allied Sciences, that the book and research allowances, the processes are just about ending, and 80% of the requests made have been cleared for payment by the Attorney General's, the Accountant General's Department. And it is my hope that very early next week, all this will be paid.
Right. Prof, I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful.
You're welcome.
Professor Kwesi Yanka is Deputy Minister of Education in charge of tertiary education. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is Steve Kamasa, his Deputy Registrar, University of Education, Winneba. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Yes, good evening.
What does the court ruling today mean to the university?
Yeah, well, the court ruling has put us all, we are in a state of confusion at the moment.
What does that mean?
Confusion because the release granted to the plaintiff is forced to let our vice chancellor and the finance officer stay away, and has clearly announced that the pro vice chancellor should take over the affairs of the university. But we are also aware that the same council that said was defective that appointed the pro vice chancellor, who is now asked to take over. So we are open. It looks like the ruling has brought more confusion than clarity.
So what is going to be the next line of action? I understand admission processes are ongoing and sandwich students are supposed to report next week.
Yes, sandwich students are supposed to report from tomorrow. So sandwich is supposed to start next week, Monday. However, I'm sure you've learned the attack has declared a strike, so we don't know how it will go.
So how are you going to receive the students, particularly those coming from the regions?
That's why we are saying that this ruling has brought more confusion than clarity.
So are we getting the impression that currently the university has become standstill?
Yes, because who are going to teach these students when they come in?
So what normally should have been going on?
Please come again.
I said, without this court issue, what would have been going on per the university calendar?
Oh, we would have had a full-fledged sandwich starting next Monday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the sandwich program would have been starting next Monday. And we have some international programs also ongoing. Some are supposed to come on next 2 weeks. A very big program, a conference, is coming on next 2 weeks. We are not sure how this is going to pan out.
So has the university taken a decision as to how to communicate your next line of action to your students, particularly those who are supposed to report?
Yes, I think leadership will have to do that. And I don't know where. We need to get some directives from leadership of the university. So this afternoon, we were locked up in some meetings, but there was no clear direction for us.
Right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show.
Thank you, too.
Steve Kamasa is Deputy Registrar of the University of Education, Winneba. Also on the line is Dr. Samuel Atintono. He is Secretary of the University of Education, Winneba Branch of the University Teachers Association of Ghana, UTAC. Doc, good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening and good evening to your listeners.
Why have you decided to withdraw your services?
Today, the presiding judge of the High Court of Winneba upheld an injunction on our vice chancellor and the FD. But I think what we are not quite clear of is, if you listen to him, he said the VC and the FO are the ones that the injunction put on them. But he went further to say that, and his assignees, and the assignees are the heads and deans who are all appointed by the vice chancellor.
You mean the judge added assignees?
He did say so, but of course, the last time he did so, if you recall, he said, well, he never recorded anything. So let me be clear here that we are yet to get the record of what took place today. But clearly, why the UTAC is not, has embarked on this strike is the fact that as people who teach in a university, you really wouldn't want an atmosphere where there is no peace to work. So our members felt that with such a ruling, we are actually left in a state of confusion. For example, he said that the pro-vice-chancellor should be the one to take over for him, the vice-chancellor. But we know, per our status, that the pro-VC was also elected. We all know that he was nominated by the same vice-chancellor whom we are challenging his legitimacy. Now, how can he take over when he himself has problems around him? But that's not onto us. I think it's left with the education ministry to, you know, take steps to address that one. A more important point is that the injunction is seeking to let these principal officers or their assigns who might derive their powers from them not to issue any payment for a project that's a GUS, Ghana University Superintendent Project, which is entirely a private one. A private one in the sense that the lecturers every month are contributing 25% of their salary, basic salary, to put aside so that when we go on retirement, we can still have something to survive on. So we're investing in some hostel projects with the hope that if these projects are completed in 2 years' time, that's the contract period we have given to the contractors, we should be able to let students come in and pay. And then over time, we should be able to pay back the loans that we have contracted in addition to our own contributions, to be able to make some profit. Now, the ruling is saying, please put a stop to all these things. And we give the contractors specific timelines, that is, they must finish this project in 2 years' time. As it stands now, it means no work can go on with this project. What is my future? If I work here today, I'm active, in the next 25 years or 15 years, I'm going on retirement, living on an amount of 200 cedis. Is that what I want? Please. These are some of the issues we have as a UTAC members.
UTAC, you teach us how to move forward, rule of law, democracy, governance, and so on and so forth. If you have a problem with a court decision, ordinarily one would expect that you go through the same procedure to express your grievance.
I think nobody disagrees, and I don't think at this point you are implying that we as UTAC do not abide by the rules and laws. Of course, that's what we're standing for. One thing that we ought to be clear of is the fact that institutions globally and investing precisely and these are academic institutions, we expect that what happened today in Winneba, I think you might have heard of academic freedom. We need that kind of freedom to dispense of what we are supposed to do as intellectuals. But when that same thing you're asking from us is not being observed by others, I think we ought to advise ourselves and see the way forward.
Is academic freedom interfered with if somebody has a problem with the processes going on and is seeking legal explanation?
I don't think that is the way they're seeking legal explanations. I think today, for the first time, I was a bit surprised about what took place there. You are seeking explanation. Take, for example, the explanations about a council that they said it had leaved its mandate and therefore took certain decisions, which in the opinion of whoever Kofis Okpayira is seeking to address. That's perfectly fine. But let's look at it this way. The judge made reference to the letter that the then president of the time issued to the university council, asking the council at the time to be in caretaker position, and therefore they were supposed to take certain decisions. Today, what we heard, it was like the vice chancellor and the FO needed to have gone to the president to collect specific letters asking them to do certain things, which is not the case because it is a council and not a vice chancellor. How does it become a more personal thing? I think we should also be very mindful of the fact that there are certain provisions that are made clear or put in place for people or for situations like this. For example, there's a Transition Act which mandates the president to appoint them. They have been reading one portion of it, and I think I would ask you and other journalists or other people who are listening to refer to that same Transition Act and be very clear, because the counsel for the plaintiff made reference to that transition document and said that the president only appointed or has asked this council to act from January to April in 2013. That was the period. But please refer to it. It is very clear and there's no time limit that is put in there. So these are all issues I think we seek to. For me, as we work in the universities, everybody is interested in making sure as a lecturer to graduate your students. Our concern is again about the future of our own students. We have said it time again. The things that they are seeking to declare null and void, for example, 95 of our lecturers were appointed within the period, and then another 65 were promoted within the same period. Then about 65,000 students. Yeah, the joy of every lecturer is that your students should graduate. If they have to graduate and they have to face this situation, what is the business of me continue to teach? Does it make sense?
How long will your strike last?
As I speak to you now, I don't know when. We declared an indefinite one. Of course, we have informed NEC, that's our national president, Dr. Hari Agbanu. And we inform our colleagues, that's the National Executive Council, about what happened in UEW. The fear is, and let me make it clear, it wasn't only UEW whose council had left its tenure at the time. There are other universities. What took place here has implications for all those other universities. And everybody's watching. Do you want to close about 5-6 universities down because of an impugned council?
Doc, we want to thank you very much for your time.
Thank you too.
Dr. Samuel Atintono is Secretary, University of Education Branch of the University Teachers Association of Ghana, UTAC. Also joining us on the line is the National Secretary of UTAC, Dr. Samuel Nkumbang. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, and good evening to our cherished listeners.
Our understanding is that the UEW branch of UTAC has informed you of their decision to withdraw their service.
That is true.
And what is the National Executive Council's position?
Well, we have listened to the reasons for which they have had to take the decision that they have taken. And we have the opinion that it makes reasonable sense under the circumstance, because the ruling today throws the university into some sort of pandemonium as to what next to do, because apparently what it implies is that there is no leadership anymore to be able to run the university. And so the implication is also that once there is no leadership, who is going to do what? And the fact that students have to be in session, particularly those who are doing sandwich programs, those who are doing distance programs and are supposed to be on campus at this moment. In the absence of the VC and the finance officer, the direct implication is that those people who were promoted to certain positions within the university by the VC, those people who were appointed under the council that are appointed the VC as well, all of those people would be illegitimate occupants of any of such positions, like deans, like heads of department, and so on and so forth. So the rippling effect of that means that there is no leadership. And without leadership, we are not sure that our people will be able to work in an environment that is secure.
But that is not what the Justice of the High Court said. He was specific. The Vice Chancellor and the Director of Finance should step aside. In the interim, the Vice Chancellor should hand over to the Provost.
But the basis upon which the Vice Chancellor and the Finance Officer are asked to step aside is because they were appointed by the councils whose legitimacy is being challenged, not because some criminal activity or so has been found against them. And so the question goes beyond just asking the VC to step aside. It's the same council that oversaw the graduation of students, the promotion of lecturers, the appointment of deans and heads of department. And so if that council is illegitimate and cannot appoint the VC and the finance officers who the court is asking today to step aside, then what is the fate of those other individuals who are occupying those positions, including the pro-vice-chancellor who is being asked to act? So what is the legitimacy of that pro-vice-chancellor who was promoted within the tenure of that council which appointed the vice-chancellor? So these are the issues. And the reality is that it just doesn't have to do with the vice-chancellor and the finance officer. The rippling effect is that several thousands of other people are impacted. And like I said, our members feel that there is no leadership anymore and they cannot be working in an environment where they cannot guarantee their security. There's no direction as to which way they go in terms of the decisions that have to be taken in order that the university runs smoothly.
Well, Doc,
these are the critical matters.
Doc, hold the line for me. I'll come back to you briefly, but I have been joined on the line by the plaintiff in this whole matter, Supi Kofi Kwaira. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, sir.
And I think I should say congratulations. You had your day in court today.
Thank you, sir.
Well, your decision has thrown the whole university into a state of confusion, in the words of the deputy registrar. How does that come to you?
Okay, my host, thank you for giving me the opportunity to express one or two things to the whole nation. You see, the court has stated it clearly that upon my lips and my locutory intention through this case, you see, it doesn't mean, I'm just asking a question. So when the president is not in the country, my president cannot act as the president and do the affairs of the nation? I'm just asking a simple question. The court used that. I have put injunction on them, coercive injunction on them, and the court has granted them, court, they said, be paid out. But the assets of the DC and the FO, that doesn't mean that the university cannot run. He stated it clearly. He read it, he put the ask ever. So I don't see how the Utah can go.
But if the court says that the vice chancellor and his assigns, it implies that the people he has assigned, including heads of the various departments.
Mother, look, my understanding is the only thing that will happen is ratification. We don't tell people that, we don't say they should do this. Just ratification, mother. You there holding a degree or holding a certificate, which is on court, which on court that people have signed. It will hurt your future.
How will it hurt you if you sat and wrote exams?
My argument is best one. Let the right thing to be done. People are babies. They are not hurting anybody. They are not after anybody. I'm not after anybody. That's all.
As we speak, Students are on their way coming to Winneba to do sandwich program. They are confused as to whether to go back or to come.
Them. The court's rules order was clear. It will not affect them. It will not affect them. I'm saying it will not affect them. Mother, it will not affect anybody. Their duties and the functions of the university will run. That is all.
How will it run when UTAC has withdrawn its service?
Pardon?
The university teachers say they are not teaching.
Oh, it's up to them. And I think they are running into contempt. This is our country.
Well, we want to thank you very much, Kofi, for your time on our show tonight.
You're most welcome.
Supi Kofi Kwaira is the plaintiff in this case. He is the one in court against the University of Education, Winneba. Dr. Samuel Nkubang, your action according to... do you support National UTAC? Do you support the Winneba branch strike action?
I said earlier that given the circumstances as explained by UTAC Winneba, we appreciate the fact that they need to be able to operate in an environment that they can be assured of their security, they can be assured of leadership and direction. And without that, nobody would disagree that it is improper for them to take the decision that they have taken. And so UTAC National feels like as a campus on their own with there are set rules as well. We do not object to the action they have taken. Like the secretary said, what you should note is that the same letter from the presidency, which allowed for the Council of UEW to continue to act under the period when they appointed the vice chancellor and so on and so forth, what we are saying is that the same act or the same letter allowed for many other university councils to continue to act. And so if this becomes a reference point, what it means is that it may not just be Winneba, but it may affect almost all of the tertiary institutions, including the technical universities as well.
Well, are you telling us that the other universities didn't have councils in place?
I didn't hear that.
Are you telling us that other universities, public universities, didn't have councils in place?
I mean, by virtue of the fact that somebody took office on January 7, 2012, all the councils stood dissolved. And then by a letter from the presidency through NCTA asking the councils that were dissolved, because there was no time to constitute the new councils to continue to act, if we say that was illegal, we are saying that it affected not just UEW, it affected many other campuses. And so the feeling is that if this becomes something that is binding on UEW, then it has implications for the other campuses, including some of the technical universities, which also didn't have councils, and that the same letter asks them to continue to act.
Well, We want to thank you very much, Doc, for your time on our show.
Thank you for
Dr. Samuel Nkumbang is the National Secretary of the University Teachers Association of Ghana, UTAC. Also on the line is the ranking member on education, Peter Nochu Kotui. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening and good evening to your listeners.
What is your take on the UEW saga?
Yeah, thank you very much. It is rather unfortunate that these developments are taking place. It clearly shows that the university is not being given academic freedom to operate, and that is the way we see it.
Academic freedom, we understand, is when somebody is interfering in the work of those who are directly involved in the mainstream academic work. This one is purely administrative matters that somebody feels didn't go the legal way it should.
Yeah, but the administrators make sure that academic work takes place conveniently and smoothly. So once there is a decision affecting the administrators, it will have a rippling effect on the academic work as well, no matter what. Yeah. And those of us who have observed events at the University of Education for now, there has been some political interference for some time now.
What does that mean?
That means that we know that there are some political leaders in the area who are creating this problem for the university.
And who are those political leaders?
They know themselves. I wouldn't mention them.
Yeah. Well, but people are listening to you, so you are
a
legend.
I know. When I say political leaders, they know themselves, and that is the concern.
The issue started when the NDC was in government, and it was the NDC government, which you are part, that failed to constitute the governing councils. And that is the genesis of this problem. So if you say political figures are involved, then accusing fingers may be pointing at you yourself.
No, not necessarily. When the council was not being constituted, there was a letter from government to the Minister of Education that that council should continue in office until a new one was constituted. So it was legally constituted, given the authority to operate on behalf of government. So with the change of government, we expected that quickly, by the provisions of the Transitional Act, the new government would constitute the governing council and then make sure that the work continues smoothly in the public university. University education is not the only one that is affected. All public universities are affected. And if you listen to the news this evening, they have hurriedly now announced the chairman of the governing councils of some of the public universities. See, and it is not good for us.
What will you do as a minority on this matter going forward?
Yeah, thank you very much. About 3 weeks ago, when this matter came up, I put an urgent question before the speaker, which he admitted, for the Minister for Education to come and answer what he was doing to make sure that these challenges facing the university was resolved. And by our standing orders, the minister has 10 days to answer the question. This week, he was to appear before Parliament and answer the question, only for us today to be told that he was not available. And we questioned that because this is a ministry which has the Minister of State responsible for tertiary education. So if the minister himself was not in the country, why not delegate that power to the Minister of State for tertiary education to come and answer on your behalf? So we feel that there's no commitment on the part of the minister or the government to make sure that these councils were put in place as quickly as possible.
Well, we want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
Peter Nochu Kotui is the ranking member on Parliament's Select Committee on Education. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Some of your text messages. Good evening. There is the need for government to constitute good management to ensure efficiency in all tertiary institutions. I think there will be a reason behind the court ruling, because there can't be a smoke without fire. Dauda Adele, NPP SMA group in Tamale, sent in that. What is wrong with these university teachers? Because the promising NPP and President Nanado's government want to send Ghanaian education to the next level. These university teachers should not drag the education calendar backward. Jake NSIA sent in that from Kaliu. And moving on to other stories. In line with the ruling government's campaign promise to set up three development authorities and Zongo Development Fund, Minister of Finance Ken Oforiatta captured these in the 2017 Budget and Economic Policy Statement, which he presented to Parliament. The development authorities are the Northern, Middle Belt and Coastal Development Authorities. These authorities will be the main economic development implementing agencies in the areas they cover. President Nana Dankwa Akufo-Addo today gave executive approval to the development authorities and the Zango Development Fund bills. All the bills are expected to be laid in Parliament on Wednesday. Meanwhile, the abolition of taxes on spare parts will also be effective from Monday. Behind the News examines these issues tonight, and joining us on the line is the technical advisor at the office of the Vice President, Dr. Mutaka Alolo. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, good evening to all your listeners.
Thanks for your time. Doc, what is the rationale behind the establishment of these development authorities?
You know, good evening once again, and good evening to all your listeners. In the run-up to the 2016 general election, the president, on his usual tour around the country, realized that or observed that there are several communities who are lacking basic infrastructure, basic needs, basic necessities. They are lacking these stuff in the community. And through wide consultation, the president has decided to reorganize our capital expenditure, to kind of rearrange the way we rearrange our capital expenditure by allocating one equivalent of $1 million to every constituency in the country. That was one of the flagship promises that the president made in the run-up to the election. What this means is, in every year, in every budget, every constituency in the country will have an allocation of an equivalent of $1 million for their infrastructure. When the president promised this before the election, he also promised that the three development authorities will be the implementing agency for the 1 million per constituency. Okay. 1 million per constituency is under a program called IPEP, which is Infrastructure for Poverty Eradication Program. And the three development authorities are supposed to implement this program. And this program is where every constituency will be allocated equivalent of $1 million. What? We are about 7 months into government, and the year is kind of running to getting to an end. The money has been budgeted for. As we see, every constituency has an equivalent of $1 million to spend on infrastructure projects. There are some legal processes that need to be done before the development authorities are established. As we speak now, the president has given executive approval for the bills to be laid in Parliament next week. And once the bills are laid in Parliament, the necessary parliamentary processes will kickstart until the bills are passed and the authorities will be established. But the president, as he has repeatedly said, in a hurry. We cannot wait for these development authorities to be established before we implement this program, which has been budgeted for in the 2017 budget. So, Cabinet approved a transitional arrangement, okay, which is a 10-member team for every constituency, for every region in the country. So in every region, there will be a 10-member team, which was what was integrated today for the coastal zone. The coastal zone comprises of the Greater Accra region, the Northern region, the Central region, and the Western region. There are 10-member teams were inaugurated today, and they were taken through the process of doing the needs assessment for the constituencies to ascertain the projects that the constituencies need for the implementation of IPEP. So basically, the development authorities will implement IPEP and also undertake other development projects in the zones that they cover.
Doc, how do we avoid conflict here? These constituencies certainly fall under districts or municipalities, and obviously regional coordinating councils.
Yeah. We see with the issue of conflict, we have kind of, we've thought through it, and if you were here at the inauguration today, we had all these in the coastal zone, and the regional ministers covering those regions that we inaugurated today. They were all here. They have to work in collaboration. You know, for government, you have to work in collaboration with all other government agencies for a consolidated development strategy. You need to work together. You need to collaborate with each other. And what these development authorities are going to be doing is that we want to enhance bottom-up development approach. The District Assembly Common Fund will still go to the district for them to implement their projects. But the 1 million per constituency is money that is readily available for the constituents to decide whatever they want for the money to be used for. So there's no conflict that is going to come out of this. District Assembly will have their projects that they are doing. What this 1 million is thought to do is to kind of complement what the districts are doing already. And they work in close collaboration with each other. And for instance, there are some emergency issues that maybe there will be some kind of rainstorm and roof of school buildings will be wiped out and stuff like that, and there will be an urgent need for a constituency to kind of fix that for students to be able to continue with their education. The one million money for every constituency can be accessed to do some of these projects and other projects. We also realize that there are some communities that there is no even toilets, there is no potable drinking water for them to drink. These are basic necessities, and these are things that, I mean, in this century, we cannot sit down while people are suffering, not having any kind of thing. This is why the president has given each $21 million. They have to decide on what project that they want to do, which will be undertaken. So it's kind of cut out from what the district does. So there will be some collaboration, okay, but there wouldn't be any conflict.
But, Doc, listening to your explanation very well, there's going to be some kind of bottom-up approach in the implementation of all these programs.
Yes.
But we understand over the years per research reports that development in this country has not been that even. So we keep hearing the central region, for instance, the Upper West, Upper East, are among the poorest in the country. So per what is on paper, we're simply going to uplift the same status quo?
Not necessarily uplifting the same status quo. You know, for most communities, especially the deprived ones that you have just mentioned, they will largely benefit. They will benefit from this much more than every constituency will be an equivalent of 1 million, but they have some basic needs that can easily be undertaken at this moment when the needs assessments are done. And you see, as part of the mandate of the development authorities as well, for instance, the Northern Development Authority, the development authority is responsible for acceleration of the economic transformation of all the three northern regions. So apart from the management of the IPEP fund, which is the 1 million for constituencies, they also have some catalytic projects that they will undertake to uplift the zones that they cover, the regions that they cover, and the constituencies which fall in the regions that they cover.
Does this decision mean that SADC stands dissolved?
Yes, SADC will be repealed under the Northern Development Act.
And what becomes of the workers?
Well, the assets and obligations of SADC will be transferred to the Northern Development Authority when it's established.
Right. But, Doc, in the budget, $1 million for each constituency will be spent on one district, one factory, one village, one dam. But per what you have just explained, I'm a bit confused.
No, you see, in the budget, What was done was under the 1 million constituency, there were some government flagship programs that the 1 million constituency will support as well. The 1 million constituency will support government flagship programs such as the one place, one dam in the three northern regions. It will support one district, one factory at a point. It will also support water for all, sanitation for all projects. These are projects that are lacking in most of the constituencies in the country.
Okay.
So these funds will support some of the projects. And there is also a leeway, there is also some kind of flexibility for the community to also decide that we need certain projects where they can dip into the funds to undertake such projects. So the community can also decide, we need to use our money for this A, B, C, D, and that will be done. It's not all districts that will need, let's say, toilet facility or boreholes or water system. Not all constituencies will need that. So they can use their money for different other things that they need.
Oh, okay. Right. Doc, we want to thank you very much for your time on our show.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Dr. Mutaka Lulu is the technical advisor at the office of the vice president. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Also joining us on the line is the member of parliament for Wa Central and former minister of state at the presidency in charge of public-private partnership, Dr. Rashid Pelpu. Doc, good evening and welcome to Behind the News. Hello, Doc. We have a Doc, good evening and welcome to the program. Hello. Well, we shall try and re-establish contact with Dr. Rashid Pelpu. Some of your text messages: Ghana has chosen the rule of law and it's high time we adjusted and adapted it fully as Ghanaians. UTAC should respect our court. Rafik AOTPRO MPP SMS group sent in that. Oh, George, at the end times here, the teacher committed suicide somewhere in Accra today. What is actually going on? God save us. Monica Cons in Navrongo. Abdullahi, alias minister in Santani, Tonlon district, says, I think the implementation of the three belt development plan is a good one when implemented. May Allah help President Nana Akufo-Addo. We have Dr. Rashid Pelpu back on the line. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And good evening to you and all our listeners.
Doc, the bills for three development authorities have been given approval and are to be laid before Parliament. If you've been following this, what does that mean for you? Hello? Doc, can you please reposition yourself? Your line is not too good. Hello? Oh, the line is very, very bad. We can barely hear him, but we shall try and still see if we can get him clearer on the phone. On the other line is Dr. Ebenezer Ashley. He is a chartered economist. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, George, and good evening to your cherished listeners.
Doc, the radio set by you, can you please turn down the volume? But what are the development implications of the establishment of three development authorities for Ghana?
Once again, thank you very much, and good evening to your cherished list. You realize it is something that would help a great deal. Help a great deal in the sense that it will help to strategically partition the entire country into three equal portions, and then determine how the development projects will be carried out. My only worry has to do with the role of the National Development Commission in this particular regard. Perhaps the development authority will have an oversight responsibility over the National Development Planning Commission, because that is also an essential arm of a government with regards to development process, and that shouldn't be relegated to the background at all. Having said this, we realize this is a very strategic way of ensuring that there's equitable distribution of the nation's wealth, you know, among the
we can go back and go. And she said no.
The country. Now, with regard to the northern half, you realize historically, we've lagged behind in terms of development, and this could be attributed to a large extent, the large development plan initiated and the then Governor Godsbeck. Many are those who have heard this plan, but the failing will be attributed or restricted to those in the southern sector of the country. The plan was well laudable when it comes to the development of the southern sector, but the northern half was cut off the plan. It had an economic agenda with regard to making sure that the material, the natural resources of the country are made available and easily transported from Ghana to Britain. And so those who found themselves in the southern sector might hear the development project, but then those in the north were completely stopped. Thanks to the first president of this country, we realized so many schools sprang up during his administration in the northern part, and we are continuing. Now we realize the northern half is about 100 years behind the southern sector in terms of development. However, this number of years in terms of economic development lag has reduced considerably. As we speak, the middle belt has no international airport, but then the northern belt has an international airport. And it speaks volume of how we're trying to bridge the development gap between the south, the middle, and then the north.
So for you, these plans are good?
Yeah, they are good, and they will be very effective if the purposes intended for their establishment are adhered to the letter.
All right.
So what it basically means is that the funds that we made available should be used judiciously. We shouldn't have the cases of SADA and what have you coming to play again.
All right.
If funds are economically and judiciously applied, you realize we'll be able to develop the whole country considerably. And within a short space of time, we would be able to rub shoulders with the big leagues.
Amen. Thank you very much, Doc, for your time on our show tonight. Dr. Ebenezer Ashley is a chartered economist. We have back on the line Dr. Rashid Pelpu, Member of Parliament for WA Central and former Minister of State at the Presidency in charge of public-private partnership. Good evening and welcome back.
Hello, good evening, my brother, and good evening also to our listeners.
Three development authorities in the offing. How do these mean for our development?
Well, these are targeted development interventions and which are defined in policy, and the policy now streamlined into a legal framework which is brought up to Parliament for us to consider. After this has gone through Parliament and is accepted and also signed by the President, what it's going to mean is that nation will be committed in putting resources into these areas of development so we can have three development areas. But my thinking is that has been a dilution of the idea of a northern development, otherwise later on called SADA, which had been developed both by the MPP administration and subsequently by the NDC administration. The idea was to target the north as an area needing real intervention, policy intervention, and development policy intervention, so that in the end, you can get enough to catch up with the country after long years of lack of investment. You know, so it was a targeted area that will make sure that the indices, development indices, which had all the time been reading lower in the north, can now be brought up to with the rest of the country. But you know, with time, thinking has changed. The impression now being created is that it's not just it's the rest of the country. It's the northern, the middle sector, and the middle line, the middle belt, and then the coastal line. And so we don't know exactly what these bills are going to finally come out to represent. How that is going to create the equilibrium we wanted to create by isolating the north. You know, so we are waiting to see what will happen.
It means technically that SADA is dissolved.